The Life of Gustavus Adolphus, The Quest for Maria Eleonora, Part 2. Gustav Adolphus now proceeded to open negotiations for a wife. One step followed hard upon another as he sought by a varied number of methods to realize the object upon which he had determined. He knew already that it was no easy task before him. Perhaps at first he was not altogether sorry. Perhaps there were moments when remoteness and uncertainty of the goal for which he was striving struck chill into his spirit. That Johann Sigismund was personally well inclined towards him sufficiently to appear from Birkenholt's broadly genial reports, in which the worthy elector was sketched with various vividness. He was clearly anxious to form a connection with Sweden, but he pointed out with a sigh that the Prussian question was causing difficulties. Moreover, he had unfortunately become infirm of body and increasingly uncertain of his domestic authority. The Electress Anna, by birth a Prussian duchess, readily made up for the deficiencies of her spouse in this respect. From the beginning, she showed a cordial dislike for the Swedish project. In the course of 1617, the position showed scarcely any improvement. With the support of his father's friend, the Landgraf, Gustavus Adolphus, proceeded to inquiries about which implied a direct offer. Johannes Sigismund felt that he could neither reject them nor answer them with a simple affirmative. He expected much advantage to the common cause from the new alliance, but he was anxious about Prussia. He entertained the only too comprehensible desire that peace should first be concluded between Sweden and Poland. He took counsel with a selection of German relations. Their advice proved to be contradictory. Johann Gregor of Saxony, whose opinions would naturally count for much, was extremely dubious in view of Sweden's difficult position, and also in view of Brandenburg's particular obligations towards Poland. Gustav Adolphus's victorious peace with Russia was already 6 months old at the time, when the leader of German Lutheranism was making this estimate of Sweden's position. Before the end of the year, indeed, it might be considered as established that Johann Sigismund was, for his part, anxious to have the King of Sweden as his son-in-law. But after a stroke in the autumn, he was more uncertain in the factor in the game than ever. It was rumored that his counselors were united in opposition to the marriage. Johann Casimir, who was attempting to take soundings on behalf of his brother-in-law, sent back news to Sweden of an almost uniformly disheartening character. Although by this time, the summer of 1618, not only Moritz of Hesse, but also Friedrich of the Palatine and the diplomatic agents of Holland were pleading Gustav Adolphus's cause in Berlin. Rumor had it also that dangerous rivals for the hand of Maria Eleonora were in the field, the young William of Orange, the Prince of Wales, Władysław of Poland, besides others. Christian IV of Denmark was secretly laying his countermines in order to thwart Gustav Adolphus's intentions, was trying to induce Duke Adolf Friedrich of Mecklenburg to become a suitor for the hand of the Brandenburg princess. By Midsummer Day, 1618, Jacob de la Garde celebrated in Stockholm his marriage to Ebba Brahe. Their betrothal had taken place as recently as previous November, but this seems to have been merely a formality, for we have earlier letters from Count Jacob to his, quote, dearest and best beloved, end of quote. The marriage festivities, which were paid for by Katharina Stenbach, grew a numerous and brilliant assembly of guests, among whom the Queen Mother Christina and Duke Carl Philip were most conspicuous. The king, however, stayed away. He had put out to sea for trial voyage of a new warship. Immediately afterwards, he undertook the extended cruise with the intention of making for the German coast. Thence he proposed to ride in disguise to Berlin, see Maria Eleonora, and press his suit in person. As far as we can tell, the moment was anything but favorable. No arrangements had been made with the elector for such a visit, to judge from the fact that the Queen Mother refused to allow one of her gentlemen to accompany him. Although the king was anxious to take him, she disapproved of the whole expedition. But Gustavus Adolphus was thirsting for action. He seems to have persuaded himself that he could bring the affair to an issue through his personal appearance in Berlin. It was his practice to trust on his own efforts on the spot. At the beginning of September, he set sail for Kalmar in the Scepter, accompanied by a number of other vessels under the pretext of holding naval maneuvers. He probably made land at Rügen. At all events, it is certain that either now or later he spent the night in Stralsund. There it became known later that the King of Sweden had been seen in the neighborhood. However, he had for the moment to abandon the idea of going to Berlin. It appeared that such a journey could serve no useful purpose, since he was formed by Hans Grug von Arnim, his confidential agent in Berlin, that the Elector was no longer occupying his residence on the Spree. The projected visit was now deferred until the following year. The poor guy, he can't seem to get anything going on, and this Maria Eleonora is now being, you know, wooed by a whole number of people. So we'll see how this ends up working out. He does marry her, but it's going to be tricky. The sources for this are Gustavus Adolphus versus Wallenstein by Pike, Gustav Adolphus Sweden and the 30 Years' War, 1630-32, by Volk, The Lion of the North by Henty, Gustav Adolphus the Great by Onlund, and Gustav Adolphus and the Rise of Sweden by Roberts, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 1, Infantry by Brzezinski, Gustav Adolphus's Army, Part 2, Cavalry by Brzezinski. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. If you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.